This is 1A. I'm Sarah McCammon in Washington, sitting in for Joshua Johnson. Last month, the Supreme Court announced it would review a restrictive Louisiana abortion law in the coming months. Taking up the case opens the door for the court to reconsider the landscape of abortion rights in the U.S. For some, this is good news. For others, it is terrifying. The debate over abortion access is far from new. But as it rages on, so does another debate, and that one is inside the abortion rights movement. Abortion rights advocates are unified in their belief about the right to abortion access. But from there, attitudes diverge about the way forward for the cause and the kind of messaging that will get others on board. As abortion rights hang in the balance, what is the best way forward for those devoted to protecting access to the procedure? And to be clear, today's conversation will not be a debate about abortion, but rather an opportunity to look inside the abortion rights movement and hear from individuals who disagree, to some extent at least, about the right approach and where abortion should fit into the broader reproductive rights landscape. Joining us now from Brooklyn, New York, is Anna North. She's a senior reporter for Vox covering reproductive rights. Anna, welcome back to 1A.
Thanks so much for having me.
And with us from NPR in New York is Pamela Moraldo. She served as the president of Planned Parenthood from 1993 to 1995, and now she's the CEO of Girls, Inc. It's a nonprofit in New York City for underserved girls in the area. Pamela, great to have you with us.
Good to be here. Thank you.
And here with us in studio is reproductive justice activist Renee Bracey Sherman. Hi, Renee.
Thanks for having me, even as I have a little cold today.
Not a worry. Anna, I want to start with you. The phrase safe, legal, and rare has historically been a political talking point about abortion rights for many in the Democratic Party and other abortion rights supporters. You've written about this. Where did that phrase originate, and what was public sentiment around abortion like at the time that we first started hearing this safe, legal, and rare motto?
Yeah, so safe, legal, and rare really kind of came into common parlance in 1992 when Bill Clinton started using it on the campaign trail. He said, we have to remind the American people once again that being pro-choice is very different from being pro-abortion. And so safe, legal, and rare was really his way of saying, you know, maybe abortion should be legal and it should be okay, but we don't necessarily want to encourage it. And this kind of continued. Hillary Clinton echoed that as late as 2008. Really, safe, legal, and rare was kind of a talking point among Democrats in the party. And you know, in a lot of ways, that talking point echoed a different time in the abortion debate than I think that one that we see today. At that time, we weren't quite yet seeing the wave of state-level restrictions that we now see on abortion clinics and various things that tend to limit abortion access. So the debate, the terms of the debate were just quite different, and safe, legal, and rare, I think, did resonate with a number of Democratic voters at the time.
Yeah, I want to unpack that just a little bit more, Anna North. Why at the time, you know, in the 90s, for example, was it seen by many abortion rights supporters and Democratic activists as important to make that distinction between supporting abortion rights and supporting abortion?
Yeah, I think there's a couple things at play here. You know, in terms of public opinion, people's thoughts on abortion have just always been very complex. Today, majorities support abortion rights and want Roe v. Wade, for instance, to stay in place. But there's still a lot of a lot more debate and a lot more sort of nuance when it comes to should abortion be legal in the third trimester, under what circumstances should abortion be legal. People really have complex views, and when you dig into the polling, it gets very personal. To some degree, that's always been true, and we've actually seen we've really seen this kind of complexity in polling going back decades. I think what's changed since the 1990s is really that the parties have moved farther apart on this issue. And so, you know, in 1992, really Democrats and Republicans often were competing for voters on both sides of the issue. I think that's less true today.
I want to come back to that idea a little bit later, but first of all, this phrase, safe, legal, and rare, it isn't completely dead amongst Democrats, even today. At last month's primary debate in Ohio, Congresswoman Tulsi Gabbard of Hawaii had this to say when asked about her position on abortion access.
This is often one of the most difficult decisions that a woman will ever have to make, and it's unfortunate to see how in this country it has for so long been used as a divisive political weapon. I agree with Hillary Clinton on one thing, disagree with her on many others, but when she said abortion should be safe, legal, and rare, I think she's correct. We see how the consequences of laws that you're referring to can often lead to a dangerous place, as we've seen them as they're passed in other countries, where a woman who has a miscarriage past that 6 weeks could be imprisoned because abortion would be illegal at that point. I do, however, think that there should be some restrictions in place. I support codifying Roe v. Wade while making sure that during the third trimester, abortion is not an option unless the life or severe health consequences of a woman are at risk.
And Congresswoman Gabbard received a lot of backlash from critics, many on the left. One said her stance on abortion is, quote, stuck in the 90s. Now, Pamela Meraldo, you were the president of Planned Parenthood for part of the 90s. I want to ask you what you make of Gabbard's rhetoric and this idea that abortion should be safe, legal, and rare.
Yeah, I actually think that she was headed in the right direction. And I think a lot of the American people would resonate with that perspective. I think that I understand the frustration that many of us are feeling, because in many ways, to be in the 21st century still having this debate, you know, the fact that the ERA hasn't been passed and we're still debating over reproductive rights and by the way, not winning in many respects, you could say, it's frustrating. And I think I agree with Anna that the two parties are very polarized in their rhetoric. But I'm not sure that taking a position that is very steadfast and a kind of in-your-face position on abortion, a language on abortion, is a good idea. And the thing that is very striking to me, I'm the CEO currently of an organization called Girls, Inc. in New York City. And we had a fellow named Rob Perez who runs a company called, I think it's called Working for Good. He uses a strategy called, refers to as Heartwired. So, and he's widely credited his organization for helping to pass the Marriage Equality Act. Okay, they did many, many, many tests on messaging for years. They found that all the discussions and all the ads that emphasized rights, marriage rights, and discrimination did not test well, including messaging from people like Dianne Feinstein.
Senator from California.
That's right, Senator from California. When he showed a family, the Gardner family, sitting around a table in New England with a grandfather talking about why he wants his granddaughter, Katie, to be able to marry her partner, Alex, a woman, he said marriage is too precious a thing not to share. And he talked about four generations being in marriage. The messaging manage people's conflict about marriage as a religious institution. You know, so the emotional resonance that we want people to feel about abortion being something that is, you know, that is normal, fairly common, is the message. But how it's packaged makes a very, very big difference. And I think the Marriage Equality Act is an excellent case in point.
All right. I want to bring in Renee Bracey Sherman. She's a reproductive justice activist. Renee, you have you're kind of on the front lines right now. You work with women who are struggling to pay for abortions, among other issues. How do you think about this question of messaging, about how to talk about abortion, and this, you know, this line that used to be in common use among activists like yourself, safe, legal, and rare? What does that mean to you?
Well, I think Pamela actually makes a really interesting point, that she's talking about the messaging that was used in the marriage equality fight. But one thing that was missing was that messaging wasn't stigmatizing queer folks who wanted to get married. And that is exactly what this message is doing. Safe, legal, and rare is telling us that we should be ashamed to want an abortion and to need an abortion or to have more than one abortion. And so I think that this message is extremely antiquated in that it's focusing on shifting the message, shifting politics, right? But not actually thinking about who are the people who are at the center of this issue. People like me who have abortions. And we are telling you that this message is stigmatizing. We would like to have messaging that actually focuses on supporting us, loving us, showing up with unconditional support for your loved ones when they have an abortion. And I think that no matter how people may have their personal feelings about abortion, they all do want the people they love to have support, care, and have the care that they need when they're having an abortion. And so I think that talking about abortion and talking about love and compassion is more important than stigmatizing those of us for simply wanting an abortion.
You know, I don't disagree with you. I think your tone and your messaging would be great, actually.
Thank you.
I think that the rare thing where I'm coming from, I'm a nurse, basically. I have advanced degrees, but basically I'm a nurse. And I think that any medical procedure is something that the average American thinks if they can prevent it, it's a good thing. And that's not just abortion. So that's really where I'm coming from.
And we're hearing from, if I can just jump in, we're hearing from listeners a little bit about this, and we're seeing some of this, you know, diverse opinion even within our audience. Mary tweeted, "I never considered that phrase, safe, legal, and rare, stigmatizing. To me, the rare bit simply stated what I always thought was the point, that reproductive health care done well would reduce the need for abortion by preventing unwanted pregnancies and by addressing pregnancy complications." Maybe that goes to your comment, Pamela Meraldo.
Exactly. Exactly, well said. And if you look at the number of abortions when I was president, which was in the range, if my memory serves, a million a year, and now we have, I think, about 340,000.
It's actually 862,320.
Yeah, the number does keep dropping just about every year.
It keeps dropping. Okay, yeah.
So I guess that actually goes to my point, right? So at the height of abortion, the highest number was in 1988 with 1.6 million a year. And in 2017, there were 862,320 abortions. And so my question is, what is the number that is rare? Because everyone keeps saying they want abortion to be rare. The abortion rate has dropped in half, yet it's still not rare enough. So my question would be then to you, what is your rare number? And then do you say, okay, there's only 100,000 abortions, then for those of us who need them, do we have to like plead our case to you that it's okay for us to have an abortion? This is the point. It's a slippery slope. And also this messaging has been used for so long and look where it has gotten us. Abortion rights are being decimated across the country. People who have abortions, we are being attacked on the news, in our communities, in the clinic. They're being shot up. I don't see the point in using a stigmatizing messaging that continues to beat up on us. Just show us some love and compassion and meet us where we are. We can both make sure everyone has access to the contraception they need and be there with unconditional love for someone who needs an abortion. The stigma is not necessary. It doesn't get us anywhere.
This issue kind of came to a head a few months ago in July, when Planned Parenthood parted ways with its president, Dr. Lena Wynne, over what were described as philosophical differences after less than a year. And Anna North, I want to ask you about this because you've written about this as well. What do we know about the circumstances under which Dr. Wynne left Planned Parenthood?
Right. So there are, some different accounts, obviously, of what happened, as is often the case with something like this. Essentially, we know that that Dr. Wynne left. She has generally said that it was because of philosophical differences. And there's been some sources within Planned Parenthood who have said there were managerial issues also. But I think regardless of that, we can say certainly there was a difference of opinion, and certainly Dr. Wynne, we've seen actually endorse this safe, legal, and rare language. We've seen her, after Representative Gabbard mentioned safe, legal, and rare in the debate, we saw Dr. Wynne tweet, "I don't agree with Tulsi Gabbard on a lot, but do appreciate that she brought up the third rail for Democrats, that abortion should be safe, legal, and rare. We should reduce the need for abortions by investing in prevention." And she's generally argued You know, she's been someone during her time in Planned Parenthood and since who has argued that really reproductive rights and reproductive justice advocates need to bring in folks with more complex views on abortion, and that this safe, legal, and rare language is kind of a way to do that.
And soon after that tweet that you mentioned, Anna, they received a lot of backlash, and Dr. Nguyen spoke at the Time 100 Health Summit here in D.C. I want to play just a little bit of what she said then about abortion access.
I think a lot of us believe that abortion, for example, is a complex moral issue. And we may not want to have an abortion ourselves, but we'll never get in the way of somebody else making this deeply personal medical decision for themselves. Or maybe we're even uncomfortable about abortion, but we'll not want women to die because they don't have access to safe legal abortion either. So I think that to move the conversation forward, I hope that we can begin with these points of agreement and understand and accept the nuances and complexities while emphasizing what we all know to be true, that healthcare has to be a human right guaranteed for all and not just a privilege available only to some.
And Renee, briefly, what do you make of this idea that we should find points of agreement, that activists should find points of agreement around the debate? Do you think that's a good tactic?
Sure. If the anti-abortion movement is going to support access to contraception and actually fund our social benefits in this country and ensure that children are able to go to school without being shot, all of those things, right? I guess it gets really frustrating because I feel like as someone who's had an abortion and an abortion activist, we always get asked to make concessions to conservatives, but they are not asked to make concessions for us. And that is what has gotten us to this point where we have half a dozen states have one clinic. It's just not working. And I am not going to, you know, kowtow around their desire to end abortion. Their goal is not to make it rare. That is a lie. They are trying to get rid of it altogether.
That's a reproductive justice activist, Renee Bracey Sherman. We've also been talking with former Planned Parenthood President Pamela Meraldo and Anna North, a senior reporter for Vox. Coming up, we'll continue our conversation about the evolving rhetoric of the abortion rights movement with our three guests. We'll hear more in just a moment and from you, so stay with us.
Support for NPR and the following message come from Rothy's. Rothy's are the perfect gift for the woman in your life who is always on the go and loves a good balance of fashion and function. Rothy's are carefully crafted shoes made from repurposed plastic water bottles. They're stylish, available in a wide array of colors and patterns, and fully machine washable. Best of all, they're comfortable and have zero break-in period. Plus, enjoy free shipping, free returns, and free exchanges. Check out their seasonal styles at rothys.com/1A.
I know you have the best intentions. You want to keep up with the impeachment hearings, but maybe you have a job. There will be hours of testimony from witnesses in the impeachment inquiry this week, and the NPR Politics podcast will be there every afternoon to keep you up to date on all the key moments. Listen daily.
Now back to our conversation with Vox's Anna North, former Planned Parenthood President Pamela Meraldo, and reproductive justice activist Renee Bracey Sherman. A reminder that today's conversation is not meant as a debate about abortion. That's a great conversation for another day, but rather an opportunity to look inside the abortion rights movement at a critical time at two conflicting schools of thought about the way forward. So, Anna, I want to go back to you. A reason we're having this discussion is that there have been major challenges to abortion access at the state level this year, calling into question for many the best way to protect the legal status of abortion for those for whom that is the goal. Remind us of some of those legal challenges.
That's right. So this year we've seen, near total abortion bans really sweep the country. And these are bans that would essentially make it illegal to have an abortion as early as 6 weeks into pregnancy. In one case in Alabama, would actually ban abortion throughout pregnancy with only an exception if the life of the pregnant person is threatened. So, these are pieces of legislation that have really galvanized, I think, a lot of support for abortion rights, I think, among folks maybe who didn't necessarily think about the issue so much, but suddenly saw, these potential great threats to it suddenly happening at the state level. I would add, too, though, that We haven't seen any of these bans actually go into effect. They've all been challenged in the courts. And at the same time, kind of underlying these bans has been an ongoing undercurrent of seemingly smaller and subtler restrictions. Things like restrictions requiring abortion providers to have admitting privileges at a local hospital. And abortion rights advocates argue that those are actually meant simply to shut clinics down. In fact, restrictions like that have sort of been marching along since about 2010, and they have shut down lots and lots of clinics. So I think it's important whenever we talk about the kind of safe, legal, and rare language to understand that, for instance, abortion clinics in the United States, they actually are rare now. They're much more rare than they were in 1992 when Bill Clinton first started talking about it.
And Anna, you mentioned hospital admitting privileges. As you know, that is an issue at the center of a case before the Supreme Court this term. And many of these state restrictions that you mentioned, you know, anti-abortion rights advocates have said explicitly they are hoping that some of these early bans on abortion could make their way to the U.S. Supreme Court, which, of course, has now moved to the right with two of President Trump's nominees confirmed, Brett Kavanaugh and Neil Gorsuch now on the court. And so anti-abortion activists see an opportunity here, right, to roll back abortion rights, to perhaps chip away at some of the previous Supreme Court precedent. Can you talk about how that is shaping the debate?
That's correct. So, you know, again, these a lot of these 6-week bans and the total ban in Alabama, the folks who drafted those bans really hoped to get those before the court. That hasn't happened yet. But as you say, we're going to see this this admitting privileges law in Louisiana come before the court this term. And that really has the potential to change the face of abortion law in America. Because if the court rules in favor of the state of Louisiana, it could mean any state could have the power to pass a similar law, could drive a lot more clinics out of business. And, you know, really advocates on both sides of the issue are deeply aware of this. And I think reproductive rights, reproductive justice advocates are very concerned that we're about to see, for a lot of them, they feel we're already in a post-Roe v. Wade America because, as you know, as Renee mentioned, there are so many states, with only one clinic. But I think on the reproductive rights side, there's a fear that we're going to go even farther post-Roe. And then on the side of anti-abortion advocates, there's a feeling that perhaps they're about to see a lot of their goals, if perhaps not their main goals, then their goal to at least somewhat restrict this possibly come to fruition this year.
And I want to ask our other two guests, Renee Bracey-Sherman and Pamela Maraldo, about this. How much, I'll start with you, Renee, since you're here in the studio, how much do you think these growing challenges to abortion rights are sort of ratcheting up the rhetoric or perhaps creating some fractures within the abortion rights movement that we've been talking about how to talk about this issue, how to move forward?
Well, I think that rhetoric is always a gateway to what becomes acceptable, right? And so to be able to marginalize abortion and say that it needs to be rare, that, you know, it only needs to be in certain cases, has opened the door for all of these restrictions to somewhat sound reasonable to the general public, even though they're actually making abortion inaccessible for the majority of people who need them. The majority of people who have abortions are people of color, right? So this is having a disproportionate impact on a community that already doesn't have access to healthcare, that is already stigmatized for having sex, for needing abortions or contraception, all of these things, right? So it's actually having a double impact on us. And so that is why we actually need to get rid of messaging like this, because it is harming us.
Pamela, I'm curious, you know, as you look at these state restrictions and this Supreme Court challenge and possibly more abortion restrictions coming before the Supreme Court, what do you see as the stakes for getting the messaging right on this issue?
I think Renee makes very, very good points. And I think that she's right, that the stories around abortion should be, first of all, I think both speakers are right. Everybody knows that the restrictions, proposed restrictions continue, and we all know what's going on at the Supreme Court level. It's a very challenging time. So the question is, you know, how best to get the message across? And I think to wrap the message in language that will resonate with most Americans is the way to do it. And Renee, you talked about love and compassion and understanding. When you talk about eliminating safe, legal, and rare, You know, as a nurse, I am right smack in the middle of the healthcare delivery system, and we have many, many discussions about how prevention should be in the front of the line in terms of messaging, how we really need to help people take care of themselves and do a good job at preventing the need for any interaction with the medical system. For, you know, that could, we could do a whole nother show on why, but I think abortion is really no different. I think that the fact that there are fewer abortions shows that sex education is working, that, you know, contraception and more different means of contraception are working. And I think it's important to get those messages out. I think that they don't necessarily equate with stigma. I was shocked when I became president of Planned Parenthood at the, I want to say, how ubiquitous women that have had abortions are. I have, you know, the stories sort of came from all over. And this is what I remember most vividly.
Yeah, I want to ask you, Renee, about that. Is the abortion?
I just want to say one more thing.
Sure.
Women that had religious objections, after I talked to them and introduced them to people like Renee, whose stories they could identify with and understand, really were very, very capable of changing their minds.
I want to ask you, Renee, about something Pamela just said, which is that the abortion rate is dropping because of improved sex ed, because of, you know, access to contraception. Is that why? Is it because of some of these abortion restrictions we've talked about? What do you think?
Well, one other point that people forget to mention is that actually that the birth rate is also dropping. So there's actually fewer people who are experiencing pregnancies overall, and fewer people are having abortions as well. I think that we've had access to healthcare in this country just shift in the last decade. That is huge. And that is amazing and important. And we should not be stigmatizing people for needing to use that healthcare. We should see them at the clinics. We should welcome them and support them. I am so thankful that you have done this work as a nurse, Pamela. And I, every single week, several times a week, drive patients to their abortion appointments and I talk with them all the time. And this rhetoric does hurt them. I spent 7 hours in a car last Friday trying to take a woman to her abortion appointment. She felt so much stigma and shame simply because of this rhetoric and that she needed to have an abortion. We don't need that in healthcare. We don't need stigma.
We're speaking to Anna North, a senior reporter for Vox, former Planned Parenthood President Pamela Moraldo, and reproductive justice activist Renee Bracey Sherman. We'll have more in just a moment. Stay close.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Google. From Connecticut to California, from Mississippi to Minnesota, millions of American businesses are using Google tools to grow online. The Grow with Google initiative supports small businesses by providing free digital skills workshops and one-on-one coaching in all 50 states, helping businesses get online, connect with new customers, and work more productively. Learn more at google.com/grow.
Hey there, it's Joshua. Thanks for listening to the 1A podcast. Please take a moment to subscribe and leave us a rating. That helps other people find the show. And don't forget, you can catch the news roundup at the end of every week.
On our brand new season of the StoryCorps podcast from NPR, you'll hear challenging conversations between friends, family members, and sometimes people who could have easily been enemies as they bridge divides and build connections where you'd least expect it. Episodes are available every Tuesday.
This is 1A. We're talking about the rhetoric used on either side of the abortion debate. We asked you, our listeners, how you feel about the line safe, legal, and rare that used to be favored by a lot of Democrats and abortion rights activists, but to some extent has fallen out of favor more recently. Here's what TJ in Newport News, Virginia, had to say using our app 1A Vox Pop.
I think the rhetoric in the abortion debate is unfortunate, but understandable. Those who are pro-choice follow their logic to determine it as routine as a root canal, and those who are pro-life follow their logic to determine it as ending a human life, and it's therefore murder. So in the pro-choice mind, abortion restrictions are needless and cruel oppression, and in the pro-life mind, abortion advocates are pushing for mass murder. Certainly, I wish the two sides could talk about it more civilly, but the rhetoric follows logically from their points of view.
And Renee, I'd like you to respond to TJ. I mean, does the rhetoric matter if people have already made up their minds about this issue?
Well, the majority of the country is actually in support of abortion access and legal abortion. Also, people may have, quote unquote, made up their mind, but we see people who are anti-abortion having abortions every single day. So what I'm trying to get people to understand is that we need to have compassion in this conversation. We need to have love in this conversation, because people who think that they would never have an abortion show up at the clinic doors too. And that the rhetoric should match that. We shouldn't stigmatize even them for needing an abortion.
Anna, I want to ask you briefly about...
I want to say, if I was still president of Planned Parenthood, I would use Renee on a TV, messaging. I think the tone and the notion of love and compassion and understanding is a very, very good message. I don't think that's what's coming across.
Actually, Pamela, I want to talk briefly about the time that you spent as Planned Parenthood president in the early 90s. You left under somewhat analogous circumstances as Dr. Lena Wynn left this year. What was the culture like when you were the president there?
It was pretty much the same, and the debate was very similar. So, you know, in some ways, the politics of the country are obviously a lot more polarized, but they were polarized then too, and I think the conversation and the different sides of the, messaging perspective was the same conversation. And I took the position as a nurse thinking, as Renee pointed out, most of the women that have abortions are poor. I mean, wealthy women have always had abortions, even before Roe v. Wade, and access has never been a problem. But it's mostly poor women. And I saw, as a nurse, a beautiful national network of clinics that could have been broadened to reproductive health services. And I thought, as a woman, I would like that. As a nurse, more comprehensive approach would be important. And I just didn't feel right about seeing somebody for contraception or an abortion, and if they had an upper respiratory infection, we had to send them away. I thought that a broader healthcare perspective would have been important, and that's sort of where we disagreed. And, you know, the board hired me for that, actually. But then I think that some people, there wasn't complete agreement and consensus on moving forward in that direction.
Renee, you want to respond to that briefly?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things that Pamela might be missing is that the language in our movement has shifted since she was president of Planned Parenthood. So that is what's frustrating, to see this phrase of safe, legal, and rare come back. It's just really important that folks who are pushing the safe, legal, and rare actually listen to us and let us lead on this issue.
And Anna North of Vox, you have written about the history of this issue, about the history of the movement. And you talked at the beginning of the program about the way that sort of the rhetoric on both sides has shifted. Talk to me a little bit about how that shift took place and why these sides seem to be, I think, as you suggested, more entrenched these days.
We've seen an interesting movement, I think accelerating since President Trump took office, where for a long time, historians who study the issue have documented this, for a long time, really both abortion rights activists and then also abortion opponents tried to kind of appeal to moderates or appeal to the center. And increasingly, that's become less the case. So the safe, legal, and rare, to some degree, you could see as a way to appeal to the center, try to bring more people who have a moderate view. As a reaction to the election of President Trump, you're seeing, first of all, abortion opponents pursue these bans that, are quite restrictive, obviously. And then to some degree, I think you could argue you're seeing on the other side too, activists saying, well, look, look what the Republicans are doing. Why should we, why should we be trying to appeal to moderates if we don't know they're out there? And instead, why shouldn't we ask for what we truly want and try to bring people to where we are?
Right.
So I do think there's been a kind of shift in terms of in terms of really people, you know, perhaps not taking any different position, mm-hmm. but perhaps taking different strategies.
I'm going to have to end it there. That's Anna North, senior reporter for Vox, covering reproductive rights. Thanks, Anna. Pamela Maraldo, who served as the president of Planned Parenthood from 1993 to 95, now the CEO of Girls, Inc. in New York City. Pamela, thank you.
Thank you.
Reproductive justice activist Renee Bracey Sherman. Thanks, Renee.
Thanks so much.
This conversation was produced by Catherine Fink and edited by Miranda Fulmore. To learn more about them and the rest of the team, visit the1a.org. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. I'm Sarah McCammon. Thank you so much for listening. This is 1A.